This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
The casual passerby I met at 3:01 p.m. in Philadelphia, hanging on the Fresh Grocer. And I guess we're going to have a bit more of a open-ended conversation just because we're looking right at it. We don't necessarily have one perspective we're taking. What interests me, and I guess what I can ask our guests, Ashley and Aaron here, is I'm really curious and fascinated by the way that the work takes on new meaning in all the different cities. It started meaning one thing in Eastern Europe, and here, a few decades later, in West Philadelphia, it is responding to a whole nother set of social codes and cultural norms and politics, economics. Everything about it makes it different, but at the same time, it's still so significant and still has such an impact. Just to elaborate that on that a little bit, some of the things that we've talked about in the past few weeks. One thing is that the West Philadelphia neighborhood is really defined by a dichotomy between the university and lower-income neighborhoods. And here we have an African-American student turned into a celebrity of sorts. And that's not the face you would expect to see of the university, but at the same time, it is what it is. So I'm really interested by how people respond to that. Also, in the city of Philadelphia, with the mural arts program and the public sculptures, this is a city very much defined by its public art. And here, this is sort of adding to that cultural dialogue. Here, now it's not so much community art, but here is conceptual art or high art added to that mix. So I think, you know, coming from Eastern Europe to Philadelphia, we see a real transformation of the work, and I don't know, that's what really interests me, and I want to see if maybe you two, who haven't been talking about it for a few weeks, now have anything different to say.
Well, I wonder, you speak about if you see this as a student, is this someone who identifies with the Philadelphia community or a student of the University of Pennsylvania? And I wonder, what was the response in Eastern Europe, if you could put that in context?
Like, the response in Eastern Europe was that people thought immediately, I mean, for the very first ones, that there was a sudden change of government, because they were used to politicians' face, and when they saw three unknown faces, they thought there was something, that something happened overnight, considering the rulers of the country. So
the fact that this person may be significant?
Yeah, I mean, because they were used to see there is a squirrel. We might make another living animal. Okay.
So,
yeah. As Peter said, I think the signification of every artwork, I mean, you can take something as neutral as Hans Arp sculpture, if it's on the pavement with no pedestal and people walking by it, I mean, it certainly has different meaning than kind of in the entrance of the museum. And then if you get to some kind of like prominent room of the rooms of the museum, where other masterpieces which are made by household names like Picasso or Brancusi, then it takes another kind of significance and another kind of meaning. So, but primarily what is interesting to me is that it always works, because last night about 11:30 p.m. we had a couple who knocked on the door of the gallery, and they were really impatient to know who this person was. And then we explained it's somebody I met by chance in 3:01 p.m. And then Aaron explained that he is a student. And then they asked some more questions. And I think art is about kind of setting the situations where questions should be asked, because I think Matisse is a great artist, but he is the only one, because I love his art, from whom I can take the statement that art should be like an armchair, meaning that you should kind of rest. And I always had these other definitions of some artists who were silent about some issues or wider issues, that they were like teacups at the dinner table and saying nothing. And I think artists should make comment on practically every situation that exists, either in our society or even outside of the social context.
Now, the person who knocked on the door, were they aware that this was art, this was high art, or they just came upon it and had
no, they came upon it, and then they were just walking in the right direction, and they spotted again this leaflet in the window, and then they said this is the right address to us, because they saw us working late, and they asked, and they got an answer. But even if they didn't get that answer, I think they would be quite puzzling, and I think puzzled. And I think that's
the. Stimulates the mind.
Somehow. It stimulates the mind, yeah.
Well, I would ask, and I probably have a wrong perspective on this, because I actually, I guess, just never look up when I walk, because I hadn't seen it before, and I walk past here a lot. But so, how much of art like this do you think is defined by people seeing it?
You know, people do walk by very complex artwork without seeing it, even less seeing the messages or layers that this artwork contains. So I'm not so bothered, I mean, if it's too obvious, or I mean, if it's visible, because for most people, and I wanted it to be that way, that my art is not visible at the first sight. For instance, if I made an obelisk in the middle of Berlin existing monuments, I wanted people to believe that this monument was there forever. But then when they come and read this sentence like 11th of March, this could be a day of historical importance, which was a birthday of a casual passerby from Berlin, then they start to question other monuments, because people are not used to this kind of conditional sentence, this could be. Because what is given and written in marble, it's always taken for granted. And I always like to give this example of this memorial plaques. Like if you read Mozart lived here or Pablo Picasso lived here, the implicit message of this memorial plaque is genius lived here. So seeing the facade or seeing the house with no memorial plaque, it means implicit message is genius never lived here. And how could we know if we know that in history there were artists who were omitted, like El Greco, for three or four centuries, not to talk about Daumier or Marcel Duchamp, who started being appreciated first by artistic generation that appeared in the 60s, and then even today he was not given to full extent recognition that he deserves.
What I appreciate, I mean, this is truly public, and it's accessible to the regular people, which is, it's becoming more and more, I guess, common these days. But with institutions, not everyone has the means to go to a museum. Even though they can be free, they cannot be free. But this is something that I appreciate. And then who's to say that, you know, that piece of, that sign over there is not a poster that was placed there by someone special. But I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
One thing that really interests me, I guess, is that if you look from all the different cities where you've done this, there's different responses everywhere, like we've talked about. But at the same time, the underlying, like, the common denominator is that, independent of politics and economics and geography, there's something about just, like, seeing somebody and that size that excites people or confuses people, completely independent of they are. their country and their government may condition how that response manifests itself.
But
one way or another, you know, there's something about it that no matter where you are, it elicits this really charged response, whether positive or negative, confusion, happiness. If you have anything to say about that, I just find that to be one of the most interesting pieces.
It is inspiring, certainly, a curiosity, either artistic or authoritarian. It's always like in Venice Biennale, my piece was moved from the Canal Grande into Giardini, where all our pavilions are. So it means that there is some kind of reserve for the art of crazy things, not to kind of forget an example that Joseph Beuys used to mention, and that is that, for instance, in Germany there was a law that if, let's say, in quotes, normal person would commit something which was illegal, would get, let's say, 6 months, and then if somebody proves to be artist, would get only 2 months. So it means that the societies, even with a strong art tradition, would count somehow on some kind of artist madness or taking this product of some kind, product that should be assigned to some kind of asylums, whether they are kind of museums or art galleries or the true asylums. So I think there is nothing unnatural in every individual to ask him a question about the environments where he lives, and then through art forms to try to provide these answers which are puzzling his mind. So I think there is a common denominator. So obviously, I mean, social context is might be different. Like, for instance, this law doesn't exist in UK or in the US or in France, but Germans, practical as they are, they thought they should probably give some rebate to the artist if they do some. But this was just an example to specify how art is taken outside of the real life. And I was always thinking that I should give the art this true nobility to be in a public context as it was in the caves of Lascaux, because when these people were sleeping around the fire, there was an artist who took a piece of coal and then he drew these bisons, and by its placement it was suddenly a public art because he didn't wait for special visitors. Next morning when everybody was awake and then tried to protect themselves or to catch a wild beast, they had also this art piece at hand. And it was probably more than just drawing. Maybe it was, these caves were at the same time the dormitoriums, I mean the habitats, the libraries, the kitchens, the artist studios, the classrooms. So there was, some kind of synthetic view on the world which we lost by classifying things into different categories. And I'm trying to break with this because I think it...
To break down those hierarchies.
Maybe not the hierarchies, but to break the...
divide.
Yeah, this division between different fields, because the statement, which I always like to repeat, if one looks from the moon, there is virtually no distance between Louvre and the zoo. And so everything is somehow connected, and I think we should somehow try to believe in this cosmic harmony that exists somewhere, maybe even as a model, or maybe even just model in this exhibition.
I just want to repeat, we have a few new people that just joined us. We have a bit more open-ended of a discussion here, just because we're right in front of the piece and with the artist. So if any of y'all have questions, please just let me know. Otherwise, I can just keep talking.
Am I wrong in assuming that maybe you thought about the public or the audience of the work before you thought of the subject and what it was you wanted
to explore? Not really. I mean, the subject is really like, if you tell me now, I have another $1,000 to print this new passerby, I would stop really the first person. So I never think about the subject because I think the chance or the hazard exists in this cosmic process. So I just wanted to emphasize that as well. So it could have been maybe a kid 4 years old or somebody's grandmother with the funny fur hat. So I don't really know who I'm going to meet.
How do you choose where to place the art?
Can you repeat that?
How do you choose where to place the art? Does it depend on which city you're in? Or?
I can actually say something about that. You first.
No, you go ahead.
Well, this is something that we found really extended into, I guess, the curatorial process. The original plans were to put it on Fisher Bennett. You might have seen the photo with Laura on it inside Slot. And we ran into all kinds of hurdles and obstacles going through paperwork and administration and university architects. And so I think, and maybe Bradso wants to speak to this, but we discussed a lot, like, what really are the limits of this artwork? You know, it's not just taking a photograph, because that's, you know, it's so much more than that. Does it include the meetings where we had to sit down with the different officials and, you know, go through paperwork and university codes? Does it include hiring the hangers who came to tie that up?
Does it affect what the art is, depending on where it's... Like, would it have been a different work of art had it been hung at Fisher Bennett?
There are many kind of practical things. For instance, I had some of the most prominent facades of some world metropole. Like, for instance, in Champs-Élysées in Paris, I had two portraits entering Champs-Élysées and seeing the Arc de Triomphe at the very end of this perspective. The locations depended very much really sometimes on kind of bureaucratical work that had to be done. Sometimes it was just simple because I was invited to do a project, so the things would be much smoother. So we'll eventually move the other portrait of the passerby, of this young woman, to the university building. So I mean, it is sometimes pretty unpredictable what result might be concerning the location and also concerning the choice of the passerby.
I'd like to say something about art, this kind of work being exhibited outdoor in the public space in the urban setting. It's part of that work is getting, that work itself gets into, say, public arena, it's outdoor. But having it realized is the first step into getting into the real life, because, you know, when art is shown in the reserve of the gallery of the museum, you have certain protected infrastructure, and it's supposed, once artist is given a show, that everything go on smoothly. But in Bratus' artistic procedure, the first step is really getting involved with city administration. Sometimes it takes, for instance, for a monument he did in Turin, it took 2 years to get permission. And, you know, bureaucracy found all sorts of
excuses
not to give permission. For instance, one of the funny ones, I thought, was like saying that monuments could be done only to the dead person. Oh, so the living person can't be subject of the monument.
So you're saying the process is part of the work, the process of getting it done?
Necessarily, because, you know, acting in the real world, you face the situations of the real world, meaning, you know, all these problems, you know, for instance...
On one or two occasions, police came and fire brigade. The work which is now in the Museum of Modern Art in the Pompidou Center, which was exhibited officially with the permission of the Paris authorities was moved by fire brigade out of all expectations and rules. And then when the Biennale was over, they handed it back, and then a few years later it ended in the collection of one of the great museums. So you really don't know. I mean, sometimes they were turned by wind and disappeared and existed no longer, stolen.
Just yesterday morning, I think it was like 10 minutes after the after it went up, the Penn police came by, and it was the Penn police, right? And they wanted to see the permits, and they, you know, they were saying, what is this happening? So, you know, I guess that really...
Yeah, and I really still, until today, doing it now for more than 30 years, I didn't realize what's the big fuss having a normal person face. I mean, it's not pornographic image. It's not kind of like selling some soda or cigarettes, and it still causes the fuss. I mean, like, is human mind tuned to be always kind of terribly hierarchical? Or I always say, I mean, I was quite lucky that I don't have this built in. I have great respect for, I mean, everybody and for certain individuals, which enriched my kind of knowledge or opened the kind of new perspectives. But I think everything that exists should be somehow acknowledged, and that's my way of pointing to that problem.
One thing that you mentioned, Aaron, that could be, maybe anybody has a response to it. You said, would it change the meaning of the work if it was up somewhere else? And I don't know, maybe it would, because here it's on a parking garage above a commercial space. Would it be different if it was on an academic building, you know, up against here a more industrial background, there up against a more university building, formal background? And I don't know.
I see, in a way that if you want to identify who the character is, maybe if you were on the university building, you would think it was a student. Mm-hmm. And here you may think it's a resident of West Philadelphia. So in that way, I could see it.
I mean, especially given the area, like, it affects who would see it also. And if you really wanted to take it deeply, like, the student that's on there is sort of would act as sort of a blend. The way that this space, 40th Street, is usually thought of as like the border of the university and in the city, and people that live here know that there's more of a blend for the next few blocks, and it happens that this person might be interpreted as being more representative of that blend because he's not easily classifiable as being part of either sphere, whereas if he had been, you know, six blocks south, or I guess it wouldn't be southeast, it could have been interpreted like very differently. So
sure, if it was in the cinema, somebody would think it's a star of the next feature, which is going to appear in all cinemas in like next week. Yeah, or I mean, if it's government building, it would have different connotations. So I imagine the context is very important issue, which was in the art world first in very specific situation. The question was raised by Duchamp with the ready-made, and the very well-known Italian critic and professor from Rome, Achille Bonito, Oliva, said Duchamp discovered the found object, and Dmitrievich found subject. So this is like expanding on this issue on context. It's not the only issue kind of raised by this work, but it is one of the issues.
One thing that I also find really interesting is obviously we're all here in this conversation because we have some sort of connection to Slot or people associated with Slot, and we know a lot more of the background of what this work is, even the fact that we're coming into it knowing that it's art. And I think, given that this is sort of a boundary of sorts, this intersection, I'm interested in what somebody who has never heard of slot, you know, would think when they walk down the street and just look up and see that. Do they look up and keep walking down the street and not think twice? You had mentioned that you don't look up when you walk. You know, we were on this corner yesterday speaking, and there was, and taking photos, and there was one woman who was hanging right around our group who kept trying to sort of eavesdrop in, or she looked like she had some sort of interest and was curious. So, I don't know, that really fascinates me, what your uninformed person, how they respond and what they have to say.
But I just like to say that I make works for everybody's kind of eye level. Like, I make some floor pieces too. So, for instance, this piece, which is in front of the Cologne Cathedral, which was commissioned on the occasion of this bicentenary of the finished cathedral. And they asked, for instance, six artists like Andy Warhol or Joseph Beuys or Namjoon Paik or Klaus Oldenburg, and they all made something in the reference to the cathedral. For instance, Andy Warhol made a polyptych with the four cathedrals, making obviously references to Monet Cathedral. Joseph Beuys made the reference to the entrance, and then Pike had like a sunken model of the cathedral in the aquarium with fishes. And then what I proposed was a plaque. I took a granite slab from this plateau in front of the cathedral and engraved the text, "This could be a place of historical importance," and it still could be seen there. So for somebody who doesn't look up can see the piece on the floor, and then there is a piece which is a kind of on the side with the 28th of February, that this could be a day of historical importance. So I kind of tend to think about different perspectives.
Making it accessible.
Yeah.
Yep. So in terms of the public and subject, so you highlight the momentariness for the public, for the fleetingness even of public art for passersby, but at the same time you're extending that moment for the subject who was just passing by. So I was wondering if you could talk about like the tension there, if not tension, the kind of energy at play between those two sort of seemingly like oppositional energies.
I don't know if I got your, if I understood your question, but...
In the sense that the subject here is like still here
And
here until it comes down.
Right.
When, for the passerby, it's, it's gone.
One instant moment.
Yeah. So...
You mean
is there,
this
know,
particular one just walked away or...
I think he might be...
What I'm saying is this moment's extended for this subject, right?
Right.
But, while you're also highlighting to some anonymous passerby that this is just a moment and gone.
I always prefer to say casual passerby instead of anonymous, because once, when I was still a student in London, I stopped the passerby and I asked him to be photographed. And then... he accepted, and just when I was about to leave, I spotted that there was a basket on his bike and a very interesting book that came like 5 weeks ago. And I said, I normally don't do that, but I said, excuse my curiosity, what do you do? I mean, having this book in with you. And then he said, I read news on BBC television. So he was not anonymous at all. So... this brings me to the point that actually what I'm trying to do with kind of exposing the passersby this way, they are for me a metaphor for unrecognized creativity or for creative model which yet was not still recognized. So... in that way, kind of like extending this kind of encounter, which is like 15 seconds or 1 minute while I take the photograph, I think I want to raise a lot of other issues dealing with the perception and inner perception, because sometimes people do see certain things. Like I often give the example of El Greco, who was on all the altars in the churches of Toledo, but for 300 years nobody saw it. And then at the end of 19th century, there was an art historian from Paris, and then he said this is the best painter of the second half of 16th century, and since then he is the greatest painter. We can see it in Metropolitan, we can see it in Louvre, we can see it in many other museums which have a luck of having his works exhibited. So take example of Kafka, take example of Tesla. In Paris, for instance, in the Museum of Modern Art, there is a fresco which is called The Tale of Electricity. The Tesla is the man who invented alternative current, and thanks to him we still have a current everywhere. And among 110 scientists in this fresco, which is the biggest fresco of modern times, which is some over 6,000 square feet big, there are 110 men and no Tesla who invented the electric generators, who has built the Niagara Fall dam, who's got about 1,400 patents in the U.S. Patent Bureau. So how come that he's omitted from this gallery of portraits where you see everybody but not him? How the world can be blind? So I'm trying to find the answers why, and then since there are these omissions, to counterpose this failures of history and the system, I'm exhibiting the passers-by which have great meaning to me.
You talk about exposing the creativity of the passerby, bypasser. Do you feel responsible for accessing that creativity, or what makes you think that the bypasser isn't already exposing that creativity?
That he's not.
Yeah. Are you assuming that a bypasser hasn't fully accessed their creative potential?
No, I said it's a metaphor for me. Like, this man was a newsreader at BBC, so every single person in the UK knew about him, except me, who was very often without television.
Right.
Because as a student, I didn't have a television at home. So, I mean, it's not really literal. It is transposed on another level, which is a metaphor. So, you know, I take for granted that every person I meet is a genius until they prove different. And for instance, I also tend to say that I'm inspired by stupidity. I mean, what's done by Leonardo, what is written by Tesla, what's been painted by Cezanne or Malevich, I take it for granted. And I'm seeking really my inspiration in the field of stupidity, and with the help of passerby, who I take as my alter ego and replacement for my ignorance, because simply they have different experiences and different knowledge, I'm trying to point out to something that I think it's a failure, and that is the science of history.
So you sort of point out people's tendencies to have preconceptions or prejudice. You're sort of criticizing your own tendency for making up your mind about something before you actually know anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not interested even of knowing. I just know that they have different life experience and that they have different knowledge. And it's equally valuable like yours or mine. And as I said already, I mean, how could we not know about these great creators who gave so much to humanity?
Yeah.
And I'm trying really to expose this problem.
Is this anything to do with, you know, Warhol's, everyone's going to be famous for 15 minutes in the future?
I think fame is a part of kind of illness of society, because if you give too much importance to something, then you obviously neglect something else. So take, for instance, somebody called Mr. Lembach, who has a museum named after him in Munich. Mr. Lembach was, I don't know his first name, so I will call him still Mr. Lembach. He was a very well-known or best-known Munich painter, while Franz Marc and Kirchner and Kandinsky were kind of hanging around and had no recognition and, for instance, even had no money like Franz Marc, who was killed by Germans in the First World War at the age of 27. So Mr. Lembach, who was making all this kind of society portraits, had enough money to make a fantastic house, which is now housing the works of the true artists. And Mr. Lembach is now known thanks to the Blue Horse of Franz Marc, because it's exhibited in that museum. So that might explain...
Well, I mean, do you equate exposure and fame to importance? I mean, or maybe you're suggesting that fame is just getting attention regardless of whether or not it's...
Yeah, I mean,
important.
Like Lembach was very famous, but now he's famous for different reasons. Now he's
like
famous because... Probably, yeah.
Like she's seeking attention and she's becoming famous, but, you know, to what end?
Yeah. Yeah, and for what reasons?
Right. Yeah. I was wondering if you consciously do not have the name of the subject with the picture of the subject.
Yes.
And I also wondered if you ever considered being anonymous yourself and just putting pictures up. So it's two questions.
So the first one is about the names.
Yes, do you ever...
Yeah, it's very deliberate. Like, for instance, if I had sometimes a big museum shows, I would put the name of passerby on the banner instead of mine. I did that many times. So, yeah. And if I would put a name next to the passerby, I would have less chances of kind of creating surprise, because people would recognize, okay, this name is not telling us and this face is not telling us much, so maybe he is not a public figure. So it would be too much information would be actually killing the piece. And what was your second question?
Have you ever considered posting your portraits anonymously?
My portraits?
Not of you, but of your passers-by. Have you ever considered being an anonymous artist?
But they are anonymous. I remember that my mother's aunt was always worried that I never sign my thing. So, and she was a very nice woman. Like, she would said to me, like, but this piece in front of Cologne Cathedral, which is seen by maybe 50,000 people every day, they don't know it's your work, but I don't really care.
Oh, but artists know you.
I was a skiing champion, so, and I had a long hair like this. So if I would won the downhill competition and take off my helmet, people were yelling, so I had enough of this. So, yeah. So, just last question. Okay.
Oh no, I was just wondering if there are any cities that you like have always wanted to have a passerby in, but haven't been able to yet.
Maybe Beijing.
The Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should all go for tea or something.
I agree.
Thank you.
The exhibition opening for the exhibition by Bratzo in the galleries is on Saturday.